Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and we find ourselves at the beginning of this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And you know that, of course, unless you're brand new to the program. If you're brand new to the program, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Here in a little bit, you'll meet some more other members of the Horn family commune. Thank you very much for joining in. If you stick around, I think you'll find yourself in for an enjoyable little experience. And we like to think it's unlike anything else out there in the world of radio that is centered on speech. Spoken word, I think, is the official designation. Of course, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the gateway whereby you will enter the chat room. And you're always welcome in the chat room. The chat room is free and easy. Good grouping of folks in there right now. Sparky, Mr. Gibson, Jug of Punch is there, Jersey's there. Hey, everybody. Real easy to do. Just jump in. Pick yourself out a name, jump in. If you've never been there, it's a merry crew that meets there on a weeknightly basis. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the Listen Live button. And that is particularly handy if you use Windows Media Player. There are, of course, other links for listening in other methods or on other platforms. If you like to listen via your smartphone or tablet device or on some sort of MP3 player, you can always download an app like TuneIn or Stitcher. They both work very, very well. And finally, I would be remiss if it did not also note that you will find at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com the ever-present PayPal button. The PayPal button is how we stay on the air, but most of you know that already. Most of you also know that we exist from literally day to day. And if you were listening last night, you know that we are in rather of a hole because of my recent absence. So thank you very kindly for the help that was given last night. Thanks for the challenge. Thanks for the responses to the challenge. And because of last night, the hole we're in now is about $600. It would have been significantly worse without last night's help. So $600 is what we need to do to come even. And with any luck at all, that will happen. Luck my rear end. The only thing that keeps this going is your determination to see this continue. Michael has gotten us started. And so 575 is now the number that we need to reach just to sort of stay healthy and keep paying bills. You know, every time some rolls in, I pay some more bills. It's a heck of a way to run a railroad, but you know what? The railroad's been running on time for several years now this way, so I'm pleased, and all of us are who pull this effort together, pleased to be doing something that you find meaningful, and I say that most sincerely. It is, in fact, Tuesday, the 17th day of September. This is, as noted, Titanic Tuesday, so named because of the Titanic intellects of the right wing, those geniuses who keep us in a perpetual state of, you know, they provide a lot of material. Sometimes they just write the show themselves. Show? Did I say show? I meant program. They just write the program themselves. And other times they just baffle us with their erudition and, well, intellect. The name Titanic Tuesday, I might remind you, comes from the fact that one of the 972nd tier right-wing blabberheads from here in southern West Virginia once told one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, strychnine-swigging, floor-rolling, tongue-speaking adherents that, in fact, there are fossilized seashells in the rock strata of almost level West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. That just never gets old for me. You know, when I was wandering around the campus of the University of Texas the other day, somewhere over near the Student Union, which is a beautiful Student Union building, just cool with lots of exposed beam woodworking and wood paneling, and it's just gorgeous. But I was noting some of the stonework that lined the area, and I thought, oh, God, that's just full of seashells. Or, well, reverse impressions of seashells. And I thought, they wouldn't do that just for effect, would they? It was some sort of white stone. I think it may be a limestone or something. I don't know. But, yeah, little seashell impressions. And I kept seeing it in the stone bordering around it. And I immediately thought of Titanic Tuesday, and I guess the Titanic plates were moving around in Texas, too. Because I can't imagine them bringing stone all the way from West Virginia. No. Because most of Texas was underwater once, too. That's a little confusing for your average young Earth creationist, but then again, so are shoelaces. As a matter of fact, we've got a story to get us going this evening. Criticism coming from Ken Ham. Ken Ham, you might recall, is the Titanic genius who runs the Creation Science Museum down in Kentucky Stan, and for whom the state of Kentucky is, I suppose, still offering tax breaks for building, I don't know what you call it, Bible World, where you can ride a dinosaur or there's an ark ride or something equally stupid. Yeah, so much for that whole not establishing a religion, not supporting it. Yeah, that doesn't count. But like I said, they're confused by things like shoelaces. I wouldn't be surprised at all to find that Ken Ham wears either slip-ons or shoes with, little Velcro straps across them. Velcro? It's a miracle. Ken Ham, in this particular instance, has brought a gravy ladle to a knife fight, because as it turns out, there was a conversation between Bill Nye the Science Guy and Bill Maher on Bill Maher's program recently, in which they had some fun at the expense of creationists and people who generally think that the world is slightly younger than the written recipe for beer, rivers of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl. Man comes walking up through the bank, from the bank, through the waving fields of alfalfa. Now, beer. No, they really do. They think the earth is 7,000 years old, and I'm pretty sure the written recipe for beer is a little older than that, because, like I've said before, as soon as human beings learned to write, one of the first things they wrote down after they got done tallying up how many bushels of grain they had, because you need to know how much grain you're going to have if you're going to brew beer, was the written recipe for beer and bread. I think both of them started out, first grow some grain. They didn't know what yeast was back then. They didn't understand that it was a wee tiny little animal you prayed to Astarte or something, and the beer turned and the bread rose and it right. So after having been made light of by Bill Maher and Ken Ham, Bill Maher and Bill Nye the Science Guy, Ken Ham, though not mentioned specifically, I guess felt the barbed sting of heathen criticism and took to the Facebook. And he said, and I quote, and I get to do my Aussie impression here because Ken Ham is an Aussie. Sorry, guys. I know. You're just happy we've got him and you don't. Otherwise, he'd be wandering around Hillsong somewhere with his hands in the air or somebody's pocket.
Bill Nye still doesn't understand the difference between historical science and observational science. So he may be known as Bill Nye the Science Guy, but he doesn't understand science correctly.
Doesn't understand science correctly.
Wow.
Guy went to Cornell University. Same place, oddly enough, that one of my heroes, Kurt Vonnegut, attended for at least some time. May have even gotten a degree there after he got done, clearing bodies out of slaughterhouses after the brutal, vicious bombing of Dresden. But no, it doesn't understand science correctly. See, the fundies and the weirdos and the mouth breathers and the knuckle walkers and the strychnine swiggers and the tongue speakers and the faith healers and the layer ons of hands and those who are given the gift of prophecy, they think the earth is really 7,000 years old or thereabouts. Never mind all that sciencey stuff, because they've found their way around it. Oh, poor Dr. John. Dr. John, it's tennis ball and duct tape time for you, my friend, if you're listening. Here's how it works in the strange, strange mind of Ken Ham and other creationists like him who want children in school to be taught that Adam and Eve rode to church on the back of a friendly vegan Tyrannosaurus Rex. They do. They believe that Tyrannosaurus Rex was a vegetarian. Probably an outright vegan. Just sitting there. Those long, long, sharp, really freaking scary long teeth, using that to chew up leaves, even though really sharp, pointy, nasty teeth aren't much good for chewing up anything but, you know, meat. I mean, if you're gonna eat herbage, you want some kind of grind. You might want, you know, something a little sharp on the front for pulling it, but you want grinders, not tearers and piercers and shredders, and oh my. No, Ken Ham and the creationists have invented something. They've invented a distinction called observational science versus what's the other? Historical science. And by historical science, they mean that the only science that really exists is science that you can see happen before your very eyes. You know, like when the sea monkeys grow. Because I'm sure Ken Ham thinks they really are monkeys in the sea. Little whale noises. I can't. Small animal woodland creature noise. Stupid on this level is hard to get your head around. So, their explanation for why evolution ain't real is basically because they never saw it happen. No, really, not kidding. Not starting the program with a big old ha-ha, except for the fact that we laugh at these people and then we realize that they got millions of dollars! And that they are relentless in their effort to make sure that all of our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, progeny as yet even undreamt of, want them to be taught
that science that has been written about in the past, but not a, you didn't see it happen, it ain't real. As, I mean, really. Only God, and only Ken Ham's God, can cause the changes that cause fish to exist, or elephants, or wolves, or whales, even though, wait a minute, weren't didn't whales evolve? Yeah. I wonder if Ken Ham knows about the Mayborn Museum there on the campus of Baylor University, where they talk about all those, you know, millions of years of, right. I'm worried because, you know, we have little right-wing toad lurkers to the program. I get a note from them every now and then, studiously avoid them. I worry that somebody may have heard my story about the Mayborn Museum last night and have begun furiously firing off a letter to the boys over at the Southern Baptist Convention in Nash Vegas to let them know that there's a heresy afoot on the campus of Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Yeah, in order for evolution to be real, somebody has to witness one species physically transforming into another. I promise, I will not play the Barnard Sisters singing I'm No Kin to the Monkey, No, No, No. But remember, because this is worth bearing in mind, when you hear a young earth creationist such as Ken Ham saying evolution is not real, remember what he's saying is he is like one pillow sham away from being a member of the Klan. Because anytime you hear a white guy denying evolution, what he is saying is that he cannot stand, he cannot abide, he cannot tolerate even considering the notion that we all have common ancestors in, come on, everybody, Africa. Me, I find that charming, inspiring, perhaps even beautiful. But to Ken Ham, it means that he might not be quite as, you know, his genetics might not be quite as pure and lily white as he wants to be, because that, you ever notice when they talk about, when they talk about evolution, they say, I'm not kin to a monkey? Well, what they're saying, they never say, I'm not kin to an orangutan. They never say, I'm not kin to a gorilla. They never say, I'm not kin to a bonobo. What they're saying is they cannot stand the idea that evolution took place in Africa, and that means that everybody on this planet, even the folks with the high melanin content in their skins, are at some distant reach correlated. I never saw no evolution happening, therefore it's not real. Ham's exact words. What a load of nonsense. These two mock the Bible and totally distort the Bible's account of the creation of the sun and the moon. Because there's a lot there to distort. Oh, yeah, what does it say? God placed two great lights in the sky. The sun, the greater light, and the moon, the lesser light, which it isn't. The moon, but see, that's the thing. If you're a young earth creationist, you have to believe that the moon is a net producer of light, just not as much as the sun. Not a reflector of light, which we kind of know it is. Thanks, Randy, for helping out and joining in with Michael. That means we are now down to 550 for the fundraising goal for this evening. Thank you very kindly. Marty's off and running. And, of course, the people who wrote that recipe for beer were those godless Arab Muslims in Iran. Yes, I know, they're really Persians. But, no, actually, they're not. No, we're talking about the Sumerians or the folks from Ur. And, I mean, they kind of predate actual Medes and Persians, although they may be distant cousins. But, yeah, Marty's on the right track. Marty also... Yes, a T-Rex, and their equivalent of the Flintstones' pet dino was a Velociraptor. You know it! Finally, noting, Marty does, they never saw evolution, but they see miracles. Mm-hmm, says Marty. Right, they see miracles in Miracle Whip. Look, it's the Blessed Virgin. It's the Blessed Virgin in the Worcestershire sauce. No, it isn't. Wrong color. Oh, there she is in the mayonnaise. Yes, in the Miracle Whip. Praise Jesus. Yeah, see, I knew that would hurt Dr. John. Subject line. Oh, stop! That historical versus observational science thing is tired and stupid. They try to claim that things we can't directly observe don't count as empirical science because we can't structure experiments to test hypotheses about phenomena that take a long time or are far removed from us. By that logic, astrophysics, quantum mechanics, and geology aren't sciences. Moreover, notes Dr. John, I'm so sorry. I don't think I've ever received an email from Dr. John saying, oh, stop! Moreover, says Dr. John, we can observe evolution occurring. On a micro level, it happens all the time. Between generations, gene frequencies change. By extension, over enough generations, speciation would occur. It has to. It's logically predicted by things we can observe. Don't get me started on this historical science ain't science nonsense. I fear I already have, Dr. John. Feel free to liberally apply the fermented malt beverage of your choice in honor of the folks who wrote down the recipe back before the Earth was created. Yeah, fruit flies. Aren't fruit flies big in the lab? I know we've got some folks with lab experience here. Can't you watch just fruit flies be fruitful and multiply? I made a witty one there. Ha 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 ha. You hold a hold a hold a. Be fruitful and multiply. That's good. It's good, Bob. But you can, because they kind of live and die rather quickly, and you can just kind of watch the generations and you know, Ham beget Japheth, and if you want to get down to naming the flies and all of that, and you really can. So, there we go. Wow. I mean, really? Science does that? Howdy doodles. So that gives you an idea of where we're starting. It is by no means where we're going to wind up. No, not by a long shot. I've got one of those signpost stories here. It comes out of Wisconsin. It comes out of a place called Alma, Wisconsin. Or maybe it's Alma. I'm guessing Alma. Jackson County, Wisconsin, in point of fact. This is one of those signpost stories because it tells you how far we have fallen. It is actually a good news story. Really? Up in Alma, Wisconsin, a 6-year-old little boy shot his 4-year-old baby sister in the head with a shotgun. Man, Bob, you're in rare form tonight. That's the good news? Yes, as a matter of fact, it is, because according to the news reports, and I've read several of them today, the 4-year-old little girl in question did not receive life-threatening injuries when her 6-year-old big brother shot her in the head with the shotgun. That's good news in America, where people are constantly being shot with those freedom-protecting firearms. The daddy of the 6-year-old boy and the 4-year-old little girl, well, he was a freedom protector. He was one of those paren, L, close paren, awful gun owners. He was lawful until he became awful. He started teaching the little fella to shoot back about 3 years ago when the little fella was a year younger than his current 4-year-old baby sister. With me so far? And so the story goes that the little girl told the little boy, I guess this is kind of just the toddlerish preschool head starty version of any other right-wing story that begins by blaming the female. Oh, the little girl, the woman. Adam? Adam? Why hast thou eaten from the fruit of the knowledge of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, Adam? The woman made me. Oh, I see. Okay. All right. I'll see if it... She's over there talking to that snake again. Well, God, I've tried to rock him out of the tree. That's all right, Adam. The woman made you do it. Blame the female. So that's what they did. The little boy said, well, Sissy told me to aim the gun at her. The shotgun that turned out to be loaded. And this is one of those great moments in lawful gun ownership freedom protecting. Because the first thing, well, maybe the second thing, that freedom protecting daddy did after Sonny shot his baby Sissy in the head with the shotgun is she still good, our daughter's still alive. A close one. And then he said, son, here's another lesson in lawful gun ownership. Son, sometimes people make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. And you just learned that yourself by shooting your sister in the head with the shotgun. But it looks like she's going to be okay, so you're not going to be tormented for the rest of your natural-born life. But right now, daddy's in a pickle. See, son, you're six, you started school, you know about the police. Well, here pretty soon, the police are going to want to ask daddy some questions. And one of the questions they're going to ask me is, what in the world a 6-year-old little boy in Alma, Jackson County, Wisconsin, was doing with a shotgun in his hand? And how it came to go off. Now, son, daddy loves you, right?
Right, daddy.
And, son, you know daddy would never want you to do anything wrong, right?
I think.
Well, son, when the police ask you how this happened, what are you going to tell them?
Well, I'm going to tell them that I made a mistake and shot Sissy in the head.
No, son. No. I know over at the church that we take you to every time the doors open that they tell you that it's a bad thing to tell a lie. Well, son, it's not always a bad thing to tell a little fib.
Really, Daddy? You mean kind of like how you tell Mommy that she's the only woman you love, only when we go say that we're going out for a walk in the woods, you actually...
Son, never... don't get into the weeds, son. I want you to tell the police that you dropped the shotgun and it went off by accident, and that's how Sissy got shot in the side of the head, okay? Because Daddy loves you.
I love you too, Daddy.
And so he did. The cops show up to ask the questions, and, well, little fella said,
I dropped the gun, and it accidentally went off, and that's how Sissy got shot in the head. But she's okay. Daddy and Mommy say she's going to be okay.
This stuff, you know, happened. But this is the good news. Because the 4-year-old little girl survived the lawful, awful gun owner. 48-year-old Fred B. Mathis, M-A-P-H-I-S, Mathis, 48-year-old Fred B. Mathis, who told his 6-year-old to lie to cover his 48-year-old sorry ass, is now charged with the misdemeanor. Really, no, it's a misdemeanor to tell your son to lie to the police and say that the gun went off when it fall down.
It fall down, go boom.
And the father told him, Fred B. Mathis, told him this cock and bull story about how Junior's only allowed to handle a shotgun under close adult supervision. You know, I've been training him to shoot since he was 3 years old. He's got his... I'm not making this up. He's got his own .22 rifle. Praise Jeebus for shotguns, right? I mean, I've been training him to use firearms since he was 3 years old. What the fuck ever happened to Play-Doh? Silly Putty? Lincoln Logs? Tinker Toys?
Lego guns.
Huh? So the little kid does it, you know, it
fell down and go boom.
But the cops somehow or another, and you know, there's so many bad cop stories out there, but in this case, they there was something that was just making their BS meter peg. I don't know if it was, you know, how the child was behaving or what. But they asked him again.
No, actually, I shot Sissy in the side of the head. I did.
So, yeah, it's a misdemeanor. Fred B. Mathis, 48 years old, of Alma, Wisconsin, is now facing misdemeanor charges of leaving a loaded firearm near a child, as well as obstructing an officer in the lawful performance of the officer's duties. But again, it has been reported that, and I don't know how this happens, but I'm really glad... It's been reported that the little girl's injuries are not life-threatening.
It's a miracle!
I wish it was. Thanks, Irish Dave. Tinker Toys? You could put an eye out with one of those, you know. Two, also, Lincoln Logs. And besides, there's nothing freedom protecting about teaching a child how to play with Lincoln Logs or Tinker Toys, and a good Christian parent is never going to let a little boy play with an erector set. So that's That's the good news out of America this evening, this 17th day of September 2013. A kid got shot and didn't get killed. Yay! We're making real progress here! Yes, Irish Dave, I understand. The only way to... Oh, dear. The only way to stop a six-year-old with a shotgun... I'm sure they're working on the press release over at Nuts Ruining America headquarters now. No, Jim, I'm not trying to sound like the Great Oz with my reverb. I'm trying to sound like God. That was God talking to Adam. Got to get with the program here. Because, you know, that's what it says in Genesis. Adam, why'd you eat the fruit off the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, Adam? The woman made me! It's right there. Yes, Irish Dave, I know. The West wasn't one with Lincoln logs either. Especially registered Lincoln logs. Irish Dave's in rare form tonight. From Dr. John, subject line, now there's beer on the monitor. Be fruitful and multiply? Brilliant. I'm using the line in class tomorrow. Well, I live to serve, Dr. John. Really, I do. I'm good for one of those about every 15 years. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Jason. We are now down to $500 for our fundraising goal this evening, and that's a big help between Jason and Michael and Randy. If you'd care to follow in their wake, I mean, you know, footsteps, that kind of, right. It would be most helpful, the PayPal button, headonradionetwork.com. Oh, I didn't give out the snail mail address, did I? The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okay, so we've gotten all the happy news out of the way. I know you didn't think. Well, listen. Just because I have a new perspective on the state, on folks in the state of Texas, and I long had profound respect for the progressives down there, doesn't mean that the stupid crap has stopped happening down there. Let's say you are a female student at Texas A&M in College Station, Texas. And let's say you, female student, go on your first doctor visit to the Texas A&M student clinic. Let's say you're doing this because you need, now that you're a student down at College Station, you need to get your birth control prescription going. Which is entirely a matter of your own business and your own right. Okay? Well, that was the scenario that Athena Mason found herself in. And Athena Mason went in, and she had one of those really, really big mosquito bites that you get on the side of your neck sometimes, usually late in the evening. After consuming beer or something like it, and the big mosquitoes of South Texas come along and just, you know, right against you. Yeah. Actually, she told KUT-TV, I had a hickey, and the doctor was just like, you shouldn't be doing that. A hickey. You shouldn't be doing that. Doing what? Not wearing a turtleneck in the South Texas heat? In mid-September? The doctor was just like, you shouldn't be doing that. And I'm like, it's a hickey. It's nothing major.
I would have held on a mosquito bite, but, you know.
She says, but I got a big lecture. He said my boyfriend was abusive and all of these things. And then I asked for birth control. Oh, I didn't hear the end of that. So I said, never mind, I'll go somewhere else. And she had been getting her birth control at the Planned Parenthood Clinic in Bryan, Texas. Thanks to those upstanding, God-fearing, manly men of and the Barbies who love them of the Texas legislature, well, that Planned Parenthood closed this past August, which necessitated Ms. Mason needing to go to the clinic there at the Texas A&M student clinic. Now then, and see, I'm still learning my Texas geography. Now then, she has a four-hour drive to Planned Parenthood in Austin just to get birth control. Because some meddlesome quack, and I'm willing to say that this doc is a quack, if he can diagnose domestic abuse from a hickey without even evidence of how many mosquito bites might be on boyfriend's neck, I mean, these things happen. I'm feeling pretty confident in saying he's a quack. And the fact that he wants to give the great big come-to-Jesus lecture to Ms. Mason because she simply asks to have a birth control prescription written. And can we take this moment to ask why it is that we can, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be able to, why it is that we can buy condoms over the counter? I mean, they just hang them right there on the wall in the CVS or the Walgreens or the Cut Rate or, you know, whatever pharmacy, whatever, you know, little retail outfit, you know, and they make funny little rings inside adolescent boys' wallets that are a dead giveaway of pure, unmitigated desperation.
Sorry, Dad.
It's all right, son. Ferg's in the studio with me. Oh! Why is it that that's over the counter, but birth control pills aren't? I mean, really, are women that simple? Are they gonna I meant to get birth control, but well, damn it, I got the correct all instead. Last month I screwed up and got the Carter's little liver pills. But why did she, an adult woman, need a lecture from the hickey quack to keep her from? You do know that those pills, they cause Jesus' little snowflake babies not to properly implant in your snowflake baby hoo-hoo place. And you don't have babies for Jesus like you're supposed to, except you're not supposed to unless you're married. Are you married to the fellow that gave you that hickey, honey? Oh, I remember. I know why birth control pills can't be over the counter, like they probably are in the rest of the civilized world. Because the rapists might make their rape victims. Oh, yeah, that was made over, was it RU486 or the morning after pill or what? Yeah, it was. A desperate rapist could repeatedly rape a girl without a condom and then make her take the morning after pill and nobody'd ever know that he had done made a rape baby inside her. Whoop!
So if you happen, I don't think we've got any listeners on the campus of Texas A&M University, because I'm pretty sure if we had, I would have received hate mail for saying that I hoped that the defense of the University of Alabama broke Johnny Manziel into 200 million tiny little pieces last Saturday, which they didn't. But you know, a win's as good. You know, a 1 point win's as good as a 1,000 point one. No, I don't think we've got any listeners on the Texas A&M campus. I think if this program came through any speaker anywhere near the Texas A&M campus, it would probably spontaneously combust just from all the liberalism going down here. Gracious. Just, you know, gracious. Mercy sakes, even. And who knows where else that happens in Texas? Or Oklahoma Stan, or Louisiana Stan, or Alabama Stan, or Tennessee Stan, or Georgia Stan, or South Carolina Stan, or North Carolina Stan, or Kentucky Stan, or Arkansas Stan, or Talibandiana. Lord only knows. Don't forget Kansas Stan, Idaho Stan, Arizona Stan, Montana Stan, Wyoming Stan, the Dakota Stans. Lord only knows how many times that happens. Well, I don't feel good in my conscience about writing you your filthy little abortion prescription. Why don't you go marry some godly man and submit yourself unto him, like the Bible says for you to do? And yes, they really do that too. Some quack's conscience is more important than a woman's ability. Yep. Oh, sorry, Jay Cruzen. I left out North Carolina Stan. I left out Virginia Stan, and well, I left out the whole of Appalachia Stan, for that matter. And New Hampshire Stan. We're just getting all stand up. Have you stood up? Well, but you know, that's how it all works out. All these good, upstanding, God-fearing Christians just want these women to be fruitful and multiply. I'm going to keep working that one. It was good to the yeah, hell yeah. So there's that. No, you don't. No, you don't, Irish Dave. Irish Dave noting, I don't have to tell you that A&M is Jimmy Dick's old school. He studied up on animal husbandry there. Do you, heifer, take this man? No, enough. Like I said, the titanic intellect of the right wing is an awesome, awesome sight to behold. And because of things that intervened yesterday, we did not get around to this story, but I cannot leave it lie. I guess some people actually watched the Miss America pageant on Sunday evening. And it was rather a historic and historic moment, because the Miss America winner was one Nina Davuluri, Miss New York, an American citizen of genetic extraction coming from the Indian subcontinent. Now, all of right-wing America was rooting for Miss Kansas Stan. Her name's Teresa Vail. And she's a soldier. And there was pictures of her in her BDUs, and pictures of her shooting her bow and arrow, and a picture of her in her bikini, her godly bikini, with the Serenity Prayer tattooed down her rib cage. No, I'm not kidding. Right. And she was blonde, and I think blue-eyed. And all the right-wingers
wanted Miss Kansas Stan to be Miss America. And so they were deeply disturbed and downright upset when Nina Davaluri, a woman of color, as the saying goes, and intensely beautiful, I might add. Oh, by the way, Miss Kansas Stan had wanted to shoot her bow and arrow for her talent portion of the program. Really? But they wouldn't let her because Miss America has some of them ungodly freedom-hating rules against projectile instruments being used in the talent competition. So no knife throwers neither, nor sharpshooters, because see, if you started using letting projectiles be used in the talent portion, then Miss Alabama Stan and Miss Mississippi Stan, I left out Mississippi Stan a minute ago, and Florida Stan, at least the northern panhandle part. Well, all the women from the Stan states would start doing skeet shooting over the heads of the audience or some such, you know, because if their little brothers haven't shot them in the inside of the head with a shotgun, you get the idea. So, Nina Davaluri, who did this awesome Bollywood kind of dance number for her talent, instead of wanting to shoot anyone or thing, gets crowned Miss America, and even making that really freaky "I just won Miss America" face, she's still pretty beautiful. Who am I kidding? She's really beautiful. And then the hissy began. I offer you the tweet of a Twitter user by the name of Pookie. Pookie tweeted, I get a laugh track tonight. It's kind of fun.
Pookie.
Pookie tweeted, and the Arab wins Miss America. Classic. No, really? The Arab. Nina Davaluri, being an American citizen, let's just kind of keep that at the forefront of our discussion here. And the Arab wins Miss America, classic. But Pookie is downright erudite compared to Jake Amick, who in his righteous American fury... Oh, this is too good. Tweeted, how the F does a foreigner win little M Miss Big A America? How the F does a foreigner win Miss America? She is a Arab. Exclamation point. Hashtag. Thank you. Thank you, goddess of irony. Thank you. Sometimes I wish you would just leave me the F alone, but in this instance, thank you. Hashtag, now this is a guy, she is a Arab, hashtag idiots. Oh, God. I'll be, I don't know. What's the appropriate offering for the goddess of irony over at her little, at everybody's little personal, I mean, do you just put a Twinkie or a ho-ho up there? I don't know. And then there's Logan Van Voris, who is trying to make sense of the whole cultural milieu at one time. Logan Van Voris tweeting, Miss Arab wins Miss America, and the score of the Seattle-San Fran game is 5-0 at the half. What is life? I think Logan Van Voris was in the midst of an existential crisis at that point. And then along comes Jessica Ayers,
who was having some issues with geography. I mean, do you remember when Junior Miss or Miss Teen South Carolina said that maybe we were having problems because we didn't have enough maps? And everybody derided her as being a real bubblehead. She may have been right. Jessica Ayers said, I swear I'm not racist, but this is America. And along comes Nate. Asian or Indian? Asian is capitalized, Indian is not. Are you kidding? This is, little a, America, OMG. And that's followed by Sarah Whitten, who said, this is America, not India. Because, you know, I guess we've got, what, some sort of Jane Crow laws against... Then there's Savannah Dale, of whom her parents must be unjustifiably proud. Miss New York is an Indian, with all due, and that's spelled D-O, respect, comma, this is America! And Colton Evans was just totally lost. Never played a game of Risk in his life, Colton hasn't. Egypt dancing? This is America! Hashtag Miss America. I mentioned earlier that she, Nina, did a dance, a kind of a Bollywood production number. And if you've ever seen any of that stuff on YouTube, you know that it can be really wild. I mean, brilliant talent. You know, my God, the production numbers. But Colton Evans was concerned that she had did some Egypt dancing. And then there were those who were aware of where this whole thing fell in the calendrical scheme of things. Luke Brasilli, emphasis on the syllable silly, 9/11 was 4 days ago, and she gets Miss America? And Wendy Fraser was feeling the same way. Nice slap in the face to the people of 9/11, how pathetic. Anthony Ridgway will never forget. What the... Have we forgotten 9/11? Yes, we have forgotten that 9/11 was perpetrated when the people of India attacked the World Trade Center. I know things developed rather rapidly in the news cycle yesterday, but I can't help wondering if Alex Jones found some way to this is a false flag Miss America conspiracy, because the conspiracy theories did start running. You remember me telling you about Miss Kansas, Stan? We'll get there. Shannon McCann, Miss America right now or Miss Al Qaeda? Della Rutherford, I didn't have time to look all these folks up and see where they're from, but anybody gonna go out and lay $100 down at Harris in Reno and on the idea that these are folks who are from, you know, Washington and Oregon? No, I didn't think so. De La Rutherford, congratulations, Al Qaeda. Our Miss America is one of you. And then there's Audrey Graham. Miss America is a terrorist. Whatever. It's fine.
Nick Pizzo. No, really. So Miss America is a terrorist. You see where the paranoia has taken us? Anybody with skin darker than a grocery sack is a terrorist now. No matter how beautiful. She was a beautiful terrorist. And then from a Twitter user named Not Miss America, why am I not surprised? More like Miss Terrorist. I bet you thought this was all pretty awful, didn't you? We haven't gotten to the bad stuff. Miss America? This is from Cheez-It. I thought they didn't let their cheese out until it was mature. Miss America? You mean Miss 7-Eleven? And then there was Jared Thomas. No, I'm sorry. Thomas? T-O-M-E-S? One of the things that amazes me is that people tweet this under, like, names, not Doofus9672813. Jared Thomas tweeted, Miss America is brought to by their sponsors P.F. Chang's and 7-Eleven. This guy's just really P.F. Chang's? She's Indian. I get the idea. These people would get lost at either pole. You know, if you're at the South Pole, any way you start walking, you're going north. No, they'd get lost. And then Colin Miller, who thought himself quite the wag. Miss America. Miss America, foot-long buffalo chicken on whole wheat, please and thank you. Yeah, what was that phrase the right-wingers used to use back in the Vietnam era? My country, right or wrong? Whew! And immediately a poster went up of woman from Kansas stand. Picture of her in her BDUs, says, loves her country. Picture of her staring down the end of her era with it knocked and pulled back, ready to let fly. Loves hunting. And then the picture of her in her godly bikini. With her serenity prayer inked up down her rib cage, her right rib cage, loves tattoos. And then a picture of her in her Miss Kansas get up, kind of a fuchsia satin strapless thing with her blonde hair hanging and her cheap little tiara on her head and her banner. Real Miss America. So with that as prologue, Caleb Trahan. Whose Twitter handle, no, I'm not kidding, is Caleb with a K, K-A-L-E-D. Caleb is too cute. Pretty obviously not. Caleb is too smart. Man, our president nor our new Miss America isn't even American. I'm sorry, but Miss Kansas, I salute you. You're, whoa, you are the real American. Hashtag Miss America. And Jenlin, who apparently has parents who didn't bother to buy a vowel, J-E-N-N-L-Y-N, darn, I wish Miss Kansas would have won. Real American woman. Real and American are capitalized. Woman is not. There you go. Remember, this is the Land of Freedom.
and Liberty.
Wolverines!
Yeah. I mean, honest to Pete. Oh, don't tell me I don't have that song. For heaven's sakes. Take a quick run over to the mailbag in a second. Just have to get a couple of things set up while we sort of reel in the swamp of right wing ignorance. Al Qaeda. Egypt dancing. Not even Egyptian. Egypt dancing. Because, oh, never mind. Can you imagine trying to explain Bollywood to one of these freaks? Me neither. Email rolling in. Dr. John, Ms. America, I like tats as much as the next guy, but don't the fundies take a dim view of that? Something about defacing the Lord's canvas or something? Oh, there's an outright prohibition there in Deuteronomononicus. I'm pretty darn sure. There's even a Facebook group called No One Can Judge Me for My Tats. Too funny.
Aren't tattoos not even American? They started
in... Well, yeah, we learned the fine art of tattoo from...
Yeah.
Yeah. What was it?
The first original tattoos were of people who murdered other people.
Yeah. Irish Dave wanting to know, but was it Reformed Egypt dancing? Oh, no.
Irish Dave's on fire.
Yeah, Berg just said Irish Dave's on fire. Yeah. Footlong buffalo chicken and cheese, asks Dr. John. At least that dumbass racist won't be around for long. Oh, but he wants it on whole wheat, so it's quote-unquote healthy. And he said please and thank you. At the very end. At least he didn't say chop chop. Note in from Fritz. Some good news this week. Limbaugh dumped in Fargo, North Dakota. Really? Was he still living when they dumped him? Oh, they took his program off the air. Otherwise, you know, when they dumped him, he would have made one of those fracky, earthquakey things. Fritz says, of all the craziness so far this week, there is word out of Fargo, North Dakota, that Limbaugh's run on an FM station is over, and the radio station, formerly KFGO, now KRWK 101.9, flips back to mainstream rock. I don't think I've ever been happier to hear that somebody, that a classic rock format has been returned to any given market. Marty with a suggestion. Remind Dr. John. Remind Dr. John that evil is a preservative. That racist will be around for a long, long time, sadly. Michael with a note. Oregonistan and Washington Stan.
Don't overrate any part of the land of the free. True. The rain shadow west of the east of the mountains it can be a real booger. And thanks to Sal for jumping in. 475 we now need to reach tonight's fundraising goal and climb out of the hole we're in. This can happen. We're running a pretty good clip so far. So if you want to help out, run over to the PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. We'll take a break. It is Tuesday, and that means we've got the Green News Report on the way from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. After that, well, here endeth the filibobster. So your calls are welcome, 304-658-3333. And via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, also at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, and Bob Kincaid on Facebook, and Bob Kincaid, all spelled the same way, oddly enough. BobKincaid@gmail.com is the email addy. All right, break time. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Because you will not believe your eyes. It's Tuesday, September 17, 2013.
The state says at least 30 highway bridges are completely destroyed. More than a dozen dams have been compromised. This one is completely breached.
Rescue turns to recovery amidst Colorado's biblical flooding.
Chemicals from these operations may now be contaminating soil and groundwater.
And concerns grow after floodwaters swamp oil and gas fields. Mining company pulls out of Alaska's controversial Pebble Mine project. Plus, it's official, August was the fourth hottest August on record. But let's keep that a secret from the climate change deniers.
All of those secrets and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Controversy at the Miss America pageant. Miss North Dakota's talent was fracking.
Oh, man. I hope she didn't leak in the drinking water. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a sharp-eared listener gave us the heads up that the Green News Report, specifically you, appear in 350.org's latest video about the Keystone XL pipeline.
We will never give up until the very idea of Keystone XL is dead and buried.
People in front of the White House are demanding that President Obama deny approval of the Keystone XL pipeline. Yes, that's me. I was surprised to hear it.
That is, of course, a video for 350.org's upcoming Draw the Line on the Keystone XL pipeline mass action. I think it's September 21. So now, apparently, whether you like it or not, Desi, you're an activist.
I don't mind at all.
Well, maybe you don't, but I'm suing. What do you have for us today, Desi Doyen?
Well, first,
welcome to day 6 of our flood event.
It's not over yet, but as the biblical rains and floods begin to clear, parts of Boulder, Colorado begin drying out.
Downtown businesses are reopening. Many of them are reopened already and are eager to have business as soon as it becomes accessible for people.
The current death toll remains at 8, but is probably going to rise. The U.S. Army and Colorado National Guard continue search and rescue operations across the hundreds of square miles of Colorado that have been affected, while the focus now begins to shift to recovery and damage assessment. In hard-hit Larimer County, as many as 1,500 homes were destroyed. That's 1,500 that were destroyed, not damaged. In Boulder County, officials say 30 bridges, numerous dams, and at least 100 miles of roadway are destroyed, and it's critical to get temporary bridges built before the first heavy snows arrive. President Obama has declared a state of emergency, freeing up federal resources.
Now, what is happening here? My understanding is that Boulder received some half a year's worth of rain in just 6 days in this event.
Yes, it was a very rare and record atmospheric event, but it appears to have been caused by a blocking pattern that stalled the weather system over Colorado. Seems to be in keeping with previous studies suggesting the melting Arctic is altering the jet stream, causing these blocking patterns.
And I should add our reference to, quote, biblical flooding in Colorado. That's not our description. That came from the National Weather Service.
Right. Boulder, Colorado went from having one of its driest years on record to what will likely be its wettest year on record in the space of 2 months. Another issue is toxic pollution.
Tanks and oil and gas facilities torn out their moorings, floating downstream. Chemicals from these operations may now be contaminating soil and groundwater.
The floodwaters swept up farm waste, pesticides, household waste, sewage, and damaged oil and gas facilities, rupturing at least one oil pipeline. In an interview with the local Denver CBS station, Tisha Schuler of the Colorado Oil and Gas Association said hundreds of oil and gas wells were shut in before the storm, but
we're not going to know what's happening until the waters recede.
These are the extreme weather events that climate scientists have been warning about for years. Previous studies have shown heavy downpour events have increased in every state in the continental United States since the 1950s. In other news, it's official. August 2013 was the fourth hottest August on record for the entire planet. It's tied with 2005 and once again confirms that global warming continues. Year to date, 2013 so far is the sixth hottest on record for the planet. Finally, Big news in Alaska. One of the partners in the massive, controversial proposed Pebble Mine announced Monday it is withdrawing from the Pebble Project. Mining giant Anglo American is pulling out to prioritize other ventures with lower risks. Alaska residents and fishermen have fought to stop the proposed Pebble Mine for years. The EPA recently published a scathing draft environmental assessment showing the Pebble Mine, if built, would decimate the watershed of the world's most valuable salmon fishery in Bristol Bay and leave behind toxic mining waste lagoons for thousands of years in the earthquake-prone region.
This is great news, I know, for our friends up in Alaska who have been fighting against this mine. Shannon Moore, one of our Green News affiliates up there. Keep up the good work, guys. It sounds like you might be winning. For much more on that story and more that we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And I felt like a loser, but I turned out the winner when it came to Alaska, the land that I love. Here's to Alaska, here's to the people, here's to the wild, and here's to the free.
Oh, was that a little bit of John Dutchendorf? Or John Denver? I think it was. By the way, yeah, the Sparky, our chat room moderator, mentioned he liked the Tubes track there. She's a beauty. The Tubes were awesome back in the day. And the front man, Fee Waybill, genuine talent. And what a name, Fee Waybill. And it's actually his actual name. Sometimes the universe just works that way. This is The Horn, Conversation Radio. Fritz, with a follow-up. Uh-oh, not so good news about that format change mentioned earlier up in Fargo, North Dakota. Well, it wasn't good news when we realized that they hadn't dumped, you know, Rush Limbaugh's corpulent. Never mind. I should have clicked on the article linked in the Daily Kos article citing Limbaugh's departure from KWRK. The formerly drug-addled right-wing talker will end up on a 50,000-watt clear channel, and not the business clear channel. That's a 50,000-watt clear channel AM station across the state line in Dilworth, Minnesota. AM 1100, the flag. Ew. Just AM 1100, the flag, with Rush Limbaugh! My God. And by the way, thanks very much to Jack and Thomas. Jack took us down to 455, and Thomas has taken it down to 425. Thank you very kindly, both of you. Thank you very much. I think we can take a big bite of this out of this evening, and that would be a big deal. Lord, the bills, they pile up. The number, of course, 304-658-3333. If, you know, I mentioned new listeners and everything. If you've never called the program before, you know, you're welcome to anytime. We're sort of proud of the fact that this is the program that you can call if you've never called a radio program before and not need to be nervous, not be queried by a screener or anything, just straight to air. So 304-658-3333, one of these days, you know, maybe we'll get our 800 number back. If we can ever get ahead and stay ahead, I'd like that. I'd like that because it keeps a lot of folks from joining in the program, the absence of the 800 number. And for that, I apologize. It's just been really, really brutal for about the last 14 months. It all started with the derecho in late June of 2012. And the struggle has been intensifying ever since. So anyway, 304-658-3333. And on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Thank you, Karen. Thank you very much for lowering the number even further. It means a very, very great deal. We're now down to $415. Amazing and inspiring. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Sure, you say that now.
Yeah, but wait, wait till you're done, right?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man, it was an interesting start tonight. Kids?
Interesting. Yeah. You know, when Bill Hall's out interesting, I know I'm in trouble.
Well, it's this whole idea of, you know, it's funny. My generation, we played with guns a lot. But my mother wouldn't let me have...
At three?
What?
At three?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just checking.
No. I mean, but man, was it, you know, I mean, hey, our biggest heroes were those... A good guy didn't even wear just one, though, Bob. He wore two.
Well, that's true.
The Lone Ranger, Hopalong, I think all those guys wore two, just to be safe, you know.
Did Chill Wills wear a gun?
I don't think so. Now, I can't go back that far. I mean, although TV, they throw a lot of stuff you saw on TV in the early days. My granddad bought one in 49. And, the movies were fighting television. They wouldn't release a lot of their movies to TV in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of reruns. And, of course, but the radios, you know, the kids in the Christmas Story, that was part of what I saw growing up. Monday through Friday, every night, it was the Lone Ranger three times a week and the Green Hornet once and Sergeant Preston once, and they were all coming out of a station in Detroit, a radio station in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish somebody who's a better Googler than me could come out, whether it was XYZ or one. Yeah, because let's face it, Bob, you know what it took to do radio drama?
A transmitter and some people with decent pipes.
With decent voices, yeah. Well, you remember Gunsmoke on the radio, don't you?
No.
No, you never heard it?
I've heard it from time to time, but you got to remember, I'm just a... I feel older than dirt most of the time, but no, I'm just a youngster.
Yeah, because of your background in radio, I just didn't know how deep you went into it, you know?
Oh, no, I mean, yeah, I'm familiar with it, and there are places you can go online and...
Supposedly, Dashiell Hammett created, it was Sam Spade was the hero, you know, the guy from the Maltese Falcon.
Because
I think, of Hammett's stuff, I think he did a lot more of the man from the Continental Detective Agency, the short, fat guy that never had a name, the Continental Op.
Yeah, I love. Well, we've talked about this before, but yeah, I love those stories because they're less atmospheric, I guess, than things like the Maltese Falcon or the Thin Man. The Continental Op stories are just brutal.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you could say that in sort of detective fiction. Dashiell Hammett invented that sort of gritty realism.
Yeah, well, he did it for a living, and there's a good book that I had. It was actually not a published book. It was like a mimeograph copy of the... What do they call a draft for a book?
Galleys?
Yeah, kind of. It was like that. It was called A Shadow Man. Because if they said when Hammett worked for Pinkerton, he could get behind a drop of water going across the Pacific and follow it all the way to Hong Kong.
Oh, hey, you mentioned the word Pinkerton, Bill. Get this. You know, I was talking last night about my drive through West Texas where the fertilizer plant blew up.
Yeah.
One of the things as we were driving along that we rolled by, and it just kind of, I kind of did a, you know, double take. It was just a storefront in West with a big red banner with white letters on it that said, "The Pinkerton Firm, the Pinkerton Law Firm, PLLC, Explosion Claims Center."
Oh. So now they're in the insurance business, too.
I don't know. I'd forgotten to check it out. I'm going to look it up right this minute.
You know where the guy...
Because I wonder, because in the past, the name Pinkerton... was shorthand for screwing over suffering working people.
Oh yeah, they hired these strike breakers left and right.
Well, son of a gun, I guess maybe some Pinkerton somewhere along the way found the foot of the cross or something, because the Pinkerton Law Firm is now is a personal injury and insurance litigation law firm.
Well, good for them. Somebody got religion somewhere, huh?
Chad Pinkerton.
Huh. Well, you know what he did at first, old man Pinkerton, where he first made his reputation?
Keeping Lincoln from getting killed between Baltimore and D.C.
Yeah, that's one. And number two, his army, his guys were working in espionage or in spying on the Confederacy. He was working for the Union there, but they didn't do that well. They were, I think they provided McClellan with information, which, you know. Yeah, but those old detective stories were. Well, the guy that did, you know, Cannon, of course, he was a big, chubby guy. The guy that did the voiceover on Radio Gunsmoke, he did Cannon on TV, the big detective, the big fat guy.
Well, listen to this. Lo and behold, it turns out there's a direct connection here. I'm just looking at the law firm's page. Let's see. The Pinkerton family has a long and highly regarded history in American law enforcement. Well, that's subject to question.
Yeah.
Chad Pinkerton, founder of the Pinkerton Law Firm, PLLC, proudly follows in the footsteps of a family of leaders in justice. Hello? But this guy's a plaintiff's lawyer. I mean, he's actually doing the right side of the work. Alan Pinkerton, a direct ancestor of Chad Pinkerton, was born August 25th, 1819, in Glasgow, Scotland.
Yep.
He and his wife, Joan Pinkerton, immigrated to the United States, where they arrived on March 14th, 1842. Alan and his wife made their way to Chicago, where Alan found work in a brewery and as a barrel maker. In 1846, Alan and Joan's first son, William Pinkerton, was born. 2 years later, a second son, Robert, followed. And Alan's father had worked in law enforcement, and Alan eventually followed in his father's footsteps to become the deputy sheriff of Chicago. In 1852, Alan formed the first detective agency in the United States, the Pinkerton Detective Agency. And yes, it was the Pinkertons for whom Dashiell Hammett really and for true worked.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a big reputation in that field, but also, you know, it also probably led him into the, where he was, I'd say, and I'm not being politically judgmental, but I believe he was, had moved to the left of the spectrum in his older age because of the things that he had to put up with and see and do. His girlfriend, who was she? The one who wrote The Little Foxes.
Virginia Woolf.
What? No.
No.
That's what
No. Lillian Hellman. I'm sorry. Oh, Lillian Hellman.
Yeah. Lillian Hellman, yeah. She was, they were together a long time.
Pinkerton himself served in both the First and Second World Wars?
Yeah, Hammett, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he came home with lung trouble after the first one. But, he was very thin all of his life. Hence the thin man.
Right.
Yeah, but he was—he knew his business, and his stuff was good. I was sitting around here last night trying to think of the some of the stuff I've had, and I sometimes I'll get these detective novels back just for the quick. And I was thinking of the guy that wrote Spencer, you know, and 'cause his stuff was entertaining, mildly compared with the other stuff that I read. I've got one thing working on Korea and one in another book working on the Atlanta campaign of 1864. And the guy who did the Atlanta campaign has a, shall we say, a geographic prejudice in his writing.
Yeah.
He was a great fan of Gone with the Wind, which it might have been a decent, entertaining movie, but it was historically a piece of crap, you know. It wasn't. A lot of people suffered, but who told them to walk? I mean, I get so angry with the. Why the hell did they try to walk out of the Union and start their own damn country, when they didn't really have much of a country, which was proven because they couldn't build a much of anything down there to compete with the North and building and factories. Forget about it. But human.
I think, Bill, we understand that phenomenon a little bit better if we understand the fits and starts by which that eventually came about.
Yeah.
ultimately, the breach came over slavery. There is no getting around that. It was mentioned
exactly. You can't get around that.
The whole Aaron Burr thing is very little talked about beyond, you know, Aaron Burr killed Alexander Hamilton. But that whole, and I read a book I've read a couple of books on it a while back, and of course Gore Vidal always did brilliant research before he ever wrote a novel, and his novel Burr is absolutely captivating.
Yeah, I should get it, yeah.
That and, well, Julian is brilliant as well, but totally different subject matter. But I've read a couple of historical accounts that go over all the paperwork and everything, and it must be remembered that those initial urges to carve a new country out of the new country were not just something that cropped up in the late 1850s, and even with the secession talk by South Carolina and people like John C. Calhoun in the 1820s, late 1820s, 1830s.
Jackson administration.
Yeah, even that was not new.
No.
If the conspiracy alleged by the Jefferson administration against Aaron Burr was to be believed, that was a secessionist move because they were going. They had pitched this idea all over what was then the Western frontier. You know, Western Kentucky, Western Tennessee. By that time, Alabama and Mississippi, and Burr had made a lot of friends through there, and especially down in the Louisiana Territory, which of course had become the state of Louisiana. There were conversations that were had in St. Louis, and the whole idea was to go and throw the Spanish crown out of Texas and set up a second country. And this is 1802, 1803, 1804, okay?
It became a state in 1803, in fact.
But get this, which state was the first one, Bill, to rattle the secession saber?
No.
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, yeah.
New Hampshire, and they tried to hire a young lawyer, an up-and-comer by the name of Daniel Webster, to represent them in their cause, and he decided that, no, that was not going to be good for his career. And that sort of faded away. But very few people know that the first secession urge was manifested by New Hampshire.
Well, to me, the whole problem with the whole Southern secession was that it was tied to this idea of enslaving another human being. What the hell happened to, you know, being raised the way I was raised, just, you know. Hell, my mother's mother, after World War II ended, my grandma sat and cried because she had left Germany in right around 1900. And she, as the news came out about the Holocaust and all the other things that were going on in her former home place, she couldn't believe it. She was just horrified by the whole thing. Yeah. So there's so much that happens. People are bored by history, but my God, boring, that's one thing it wasn't. When you dig below the surface, you come up with all kind of, and it's a wonder that we have survived as well as we have with the amount of crooked politicians, because let's talk about New York City and Tammany Hall and... what was it when Dick Gregory was running against the old man in Chicago?
Daley.
They said something about they had to wait for the dead men's votes to be counted. And Harry Golden, the writer, talking in his book, I think Only in America, about how the bums were given instructions to start growing beards so many weeks before the election so they could vote with a beard, with a mustache, and clean shaven. With three different names.
Well, anytime you come up with a system that can be any system can be gamed.
Yeah.
And anytime you come up with a system that can be gamed, the people with power will do everything in their power to game it.
Yeah.
I mean, the dead voting is an old and dishonorable tradition in Southern West Virginia.
Okay.
And it continues unto even this day. For instance, you know about the Battle of Blair Mountain. We've talked about that in the past. So there was an effort afoot a few years back to have Blair Mountain's battlefield
declared a National Historic Place.
It sure should be.
And put on the National Register. And they initially succeeded, which would have stopped a couple of coal companies from blasting the living bejesus out of a magnificent archaeological treasure. Well, enter some pettifogging lawyers with the approval and of the Joe Manchin gubernatorial administration, who got the National Register of Historic Places designation overturned on the strength of property owners who were dead. And I'm talking about this happened in the last 10 years, Bill.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, I got so lost. When I went to Lake County and the band started to become successful and I had a decent small business to run and I got addicted to the hobby of fishing in my old age, and I was in my 40s when I started doing that, and it becomes a... You know how hobbies can become.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
I'm one of these people who's kind of obsessive compulsive. And I'll take something up and absorb everything I can possibly know about it and be completely wrapped up in it for a year or two, and then some shiny thing will come along and grab my attention and away I'm gone.
Yeah. Well, right now my...
Brewing beer, cigars, bonsai trees, you know.
Well, I looked at brewing beer for a while. I got a few friends who do that.
Well, if you've got friends who do it, you don't need to go to the trouble.
No. They take care of me. But which brings me to the reason I call it today, the calendar date.
Yes.
You know, September 17th was a very big day in its history of this country. Up in the corner of western Maryland, right around a little town named Sharpsburg.
Mm-hmm.
This was... What was the round? If you round off the numbers, about 25,000 Americans were killed, wounded, or missing on today's date, which was extremely high because both of the combatants were Americans. And you know, and to them, such a fascinating story. Lee's orders being found that McClellan should have. I mean, they just said by name where which unit of the Confederate Army was where. I mean, because a good... Well, I had a little correspondence with the guy that runs Six Emperor Tyrannus, because I had written him a quick note that I said if Mr. Lee had met up with the other Virginian, Mr. Thomas, at Antietam instead of McClellan, the Civil War in the East might have ended that day.
That's very true.
And I've been there a couple of times. And you ever been up that area?
I've never gotten to the to that battlefield, but I know the area. Yes.
Because man, I went up there. We came up out of Harper's Ferry, and there's a one back road that goes direct to Sharpsburg, and it's great. It parallels what's left of the canal up there for a while. Not much is left of the C&O, but it was big in its day. Canals were a big deal in the day before steamboats, you know. That was, whoever was doing things in this country, they were thinking. We have two canals that go from the Ohio River to Lake Erie, one on each end of the state. And the one down by us in Cleveland, that thing was still pumping business until a big flood in 1913 that knocked it out. And there's a big movie theater in Akron, the Akron Civic. And underneath the damn Civic is parts of the canal.
Yep.
That was a real... That was another thing, Bob. We had a series of books when I was a kid. They had a landmark was stamped on them. And it was history and geography and all kind of things about this country that we read when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. We were reading this stuff. And now what do we get? We give kids television. And to me, television is a...
Yeah,
you know, it's not much.
Well, I turned on the TV long enough this morning to hear Scarborough.
Yeah.
Bloviating about how Barack Obama should not have criticized Republicans yesterday in the midst of a crisis.
What crisis?
You know, the shooting yesterday.
Oh, that's, oh yeah, that crisis. I thought he was talking about the one in Syria.
No, no, no. Well, that probably too. But the and so that I sat there, had a cup of coffee, and in very short order, it was pretty obvious that the only two things that the for-profit media were going to be talking about today were, one, the shooting, and they were not going to offer any new news. It was just going to be more hashing and rehashing, and they read the names of the dead, and okay, next story. And next story was the raising of the wrecked cruise ship Costa Concordia over in Italy. And then they came back around and did more shooting stories, and every now and then they'd toss it to the woman standing there not far from the boat, and that's all there was. And I don't know, that there's something rattling around inside my skull, Bill, by way of trying to understand, because even when we think we do, we don't, trying to understand the nature of the for-profit media. It's not, I mean, there's more news out there, but damned if you would have known it to be watching Chicken Noodle News.
Yeah.
It was disgusting. You know, maybe an occasional story about, you know, how puny and weak Barack Obama is for not bombing the snot out of Syria. But, you know, little else. And so I just turned the damn TV off.
You get to
there's no there, Bill.
Yeah, you get to a point with these so-called newscasters that you'd like to... I mean, I can still remember when TV news was no more than a half an hour a night. Huntley Brinkley and Douglas...
And Edwards. Yet they crammed a lot into that half hour, didn't they?
Yeah. And the Korean War, for instance, all the film footage that I saw... Remember, I was only 7 years old, but all I knew was that the U.S. Army was getting pushed off the peninsula at first by some backward North Koreans who had, I think Stalin had given them about 150 T-34 tanks, which might have been the best armored vehicle on the face of the earth in those days. And we had broken our army down to nothing from what with a massive force that it was in World War II. It was kind of a... And guys were doing occupation duty in Japan, Bob. And you know what occupation duty in Japan or Germany was like after the war? If you had cigarettes to trade...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you had it made, man. You were a little tin god, you know. And, I'll let you go, but there was something about Sharpsburg that I just fell in love with, those rolling hills of Maryland. And that was my... In the back of my work medulla, I had this thing that, man, that's where you want to retire to. To those rolling hills. It's got to be kind of cold up there in the wintertime. Like, how, you guys get hit pretty good with snow, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, we get a good bit. And we get hammered when the lake effect stuff just dips far enough south.
Yeah, that's when you live in... I lived... I could throw a rock into Lake Erie when I lived in Lee County. And I don't have a good arm. That's what kept me out of... The coaches always thought I'd be a great catcher, except for one thing. You could put my grandmother in a wheelchair and she could steal second base on me, you know, so... But I was one of these kids that would get people to throw pitch to me, and I could block pitches and take throws from the outfield, and I thought, well, because my thing was find a job that nobody else wants. How do you think I ended up playing blues? I mean, there was no market for it when I started playing in Cleveland. There was no... Nobody knew what the hell you were doing. Because the guys I learned from were guys who grew up in Chicago and were gifted. They could go down onto the south side and sit and drink with Muddy Waters. And Muddy was a man who welcomed these players and worked with them and helped teach them stuff, and they passed it along to me, and then I passed it along to the next generation. It was a gift. And Bob, I grew up in a goddamn housing project that opened up in 1939. It was one of Roosevelt's steel and concrete and steam heat, and it was a wonderful thing. It was warm and safe, you know, and the rent was controlled. by your income.
Yeah.
And it was a funny way to grow up, but in a way it turned out to be both good and bad because I gave up on school. I just said the hell with it.
Yeah, it's all a mixed bag. Hey, let me throw something else your way since we're marking dates and so forth. This is also something else today, Bill. This is Constitution Day.
Oh, okay.
This is the anniversary of that day in September of 1787 in Philadelphia when the Constitution became the supreme enabling law of the young United States.
Yeah, and see, that's where I was at my weakest because I seemed to go from reading stuff about the battles at Saratoga and the other ones in the Revolution and then right to the Civil War. And all that stuff was kind of really boring to me, all that legalese. And
oh, but I tell you what, if you listen to Dr. Bill, you know that it was anything but.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the skullduggery that was necessary in order to even call the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah.
And maybe Dr. Bill needs to go over that ground again, because it was anything but a foregone conclusion. And in fact, the Articles of Confederation, to which all the young states were signatory, expressly forbade what these guys were doing with their constitutional convention.
Is it my conception, or was it that these people who ran these states? Now let's look at these states by size and by ability to get by on what comes out of their state. Now maybe in those days, because a lot of people were providing meat for the table with the, you know, a Kentucky rifle or shotgun. I know, still know a lot of guys who hunt, and me, I fish like it was a banditry, you know. My walls have a lot of. There's one I'm holding, a 7-plus pound walleye that I caught from standing on the lakefront at 4 a.m. And people say, "What'd you catch that walleye?" I said,
"No, teach that walleye to be out catting around early in the hours of the morning."
Yeah, well, you could leave a bar, and there was three or four of us. I had a truck-mounted camper in those days, which was the ideal transportation for a small-time musician.
But it's worth remembering that and it's part of why I kind of snicker a little bit whenever I hear somebody talking about our democracy. Yeah. It's worth remembering that the Constitutional Convention was called in large part because actual democracy was breaking out in several of the several states,
yeah.
And that crap had to be nipped in the bud in a hurry.
Because this whole idea that you belonged, I mean, the whole idea of what state you were from, which was still big in 1860, of course. And, I mean, I'm talking about the northern states. You know, guys were real tied to the state. Like it was, you know what it's like?
Like it was their nation.
Yeah, it's like college football is today. You know, and college football is a great sport, but it's a sport. Although we know it's a big business. Because I learned early about betting on sports.
Yeah,
being
don't.
A pro fan.
Don't.
You know, you learn early about stuff.
Yeah, the bookies are the ones who know. Yeah.
The losers pay the winners, and the bookie takes 10% all the way around the board, you know.
And that's really the only way to win is be the bookie.
Yeah, is to be the bookie. But I just say that we, and people say, oh, that Bill, he bores you with history. No, man, it's like a wheel. The damn wheel keeps turning. The clothing styles change. But the human heart and the human craziness seems to continue. The extremes of behavior. It's like Benghazi from the right. They don't even know where the damn place is. I knew about it.
Yeah, Benghazi, Irish Dave mentioned a few minutes ago, is a... is a Palestinian male stripper.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I first saw that name when I was reading a book on a guy named Erwin Rommel.
Yeah.
The Desert Fox. I think I read that book in the sixth grade. Reading was like a gift, but man, oh man, did it get you. You know, it takes you into strange places. Like The Wizard of Oz. Most people don't know that L. Frank Baum, who wrote that,
yeah, it's a political tract, isn't it?
Yes. He was out of Upper New York State. He worked hard for women's suffrage. and he was connected with a company. Somehow he mentions a company that was pulling oil up in PA, but Mr. Rockefeller controlled the railroads that shipped the stuff. And if you couldn't ship your oil, what are you going to do with it, Bob? If you couldn't ship it to market, is it any good to you?
Nope.
Is there any value to it? There's a whole circuitry of so many things that they say. I got into music at age 23 and kind of shut the door on a lot. I still read like crazy, but, you know, I just, well, hell, Bob, the longer you live, things will be fine. And I was sitting on top of it when my second marriage went to hell, married to a psychologist who pulled some stuff on me that I always say people are lucky. If that had happened 20 years before, I might be speaking from the inside of a padded cell by now or wearing a striped uniform because of bad temper. But I let it go. You know, I let it go. And then about 2 years later, the eyes went to hell. And that's... it's like this, there's so many things going on, you can't keep track of them all. But this situation in this country scares the hell out of me, being a guy who was standing around the fringes of McCarthy and not Eugene either.
No, the tail gunner who has a current, we have a current member of the Senate from Texas by the name of Ted Cruz, who looks like a doppelganger for him and behaves like one too.
Well, you know, it bothers me because, well, I won't be here to take an active to fight this stuff. I'm too old to fight against it now. We thought we took...
Hey, you know what, Bill? In your own way, you're fighting against it by talking like this right now.
Well, I still...
You never know who you're going to inspire. You never know to whom you are going to give courage.
Well, I stood with a guy from West by God who was behind me in line to vote for LBJ and vote for peace. Well, so much for that idea, huh? No matter what you do, after a while, you say, where's that?
Yeah, and then 1968 comes along, and Richard Pinhead Nixon has a secret plan that he won't tell us, but he'll get us out of Vietnam.
Well, when did he get us out, in 75?
Well, he kind of had to leave in a hurry.
I was sitting at a minor league Cleveland Barons hockey game when there was only six teams in the NHL, I believe, or maybe eight by then. And they announced it over the PA system that peace was in Vietnam. Well, about time. I rode down to play a job in Youngstown with a bunch of guys who were going to work with me when the numbers were being called for the birth date for the lottery, for the draft.
Right.
That was an interesting night. I was wondering, what are all these guys sweating about? You know, because I had been...
Low numbers, that's what they were sweating about.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a funny time. Well, I'll let you go, but I thought I would mention there's something about driving that road from Harper's to Sharpsburg. You know, along the way, there's a place, the Kennedy Farm. And you know who holed up in that Kennedy Farm?
Would that be one Mr. Booth?
No.
No?
He was early. He was a guy that he took the final walk at Charleston, West Virginia. Or which was still Virginia at that time.
Mr. Brown.
Yeah, John.
Yeah, that was Charlestown.
Town, was that?
Yeah, that's Charlestown. Charleston, I know.
Oh, yeah, you're right, Charlestown. You're right, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a racetrack there.
Yeah, because that's when he, and the guy was, I mean, you can agree 100% with him, but would you say he was a half a bubble off?
To the extent that he was engaging in violence, yes. But you got to remember that a lot of the hardcore abolitionists were writing words of profound praise for him. There were a few that shied away from him. You can understand the madness?
Yeah, exactly. And my buddy who's...
I'll tell you what, Robert E., Colonel Robert E. Lee didn't flinch any at pulling the trap, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, was he the guy who pulled the trap?
Well, he oversaw it.
I know Jeb Stuart was at, and Lee were both at Harper during the fighting down there.
Because, you know, see, what John Brown was doing was a direct threat to old Morris Roberts' way of living. Because he couldn't do diddly. Without a whole bunch of bond slaves
bound slaves back on the old plantation there, propping his sorry white ass up.
Yeah, he wasn't really home that much. He was in the engineers, and he, the army was about 15,000 men total in 1860, the regular army, and it was spread from here to hell.
Yep, exactly.
A lot of them English. I'll let you go with one lighter piece. There was a Union general out in the Bay Area of California, and he liked to have women hanging around his campsite, of course. He was a young officer. He wasn't very high rank, but, you know, because the whole army wasn't. I mean, Grant was only the second guy to become a lieutenant general.
Yeah.
And the third, Washington, Winfield Scott, and then Grant. Up until then, we had a very, in fact, when I was growing up, the old people around me did not have a big belief in a huge standing army.
No.
Even after World War II, it was what made the
framers.
Army.
The framers had a creeping horror of a huge standing army, hence the reference to a well-regulated militia in the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment, that was a sort of camouflage that was dressed onto the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment was largely something insisted upon by the Southern states to enable them to hunt runaway slaves. Yeah. Hey, Bill, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Take care, my friend.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's your news ninja.
Oh, hey, what's happening?
Oh, I had to tell you, sorry. I was watching BBC News tonight, and it freaked me out, because basically, over here, when that train thing started yesterday, it was like wall-to-wall coverage for the entire hour, well, 3 or 4 hours it was on. But anyway, they followed it up in the World News tonight, and it was so weird, because the anchor woman was saying to, I forget the gentleman's name, but he was some guest they had on, and she said, what could be done if a person can go into the base, she's got the right ID and everything, what else can you do? And I couldn't believe it, because the guest said, like, well, you know, maybe we should think about not outsourcing our hiring to contractors, and maybe we should bring that back in-house. It was like, oh my God, Bob, you scooped the BBC.
if I ship you a resume, maybe you can drop it off next time you're down there at BBC World Headquarters.
Well, I'll tell you what, I do kind of go by the Radio Soylent building that's right down in Southampton every once in a while, because it's on my way to church there. Anyway, it gets better on there, because then the anchor shot back with, yeah, that would work. That would also handle Edward Snowden, too, or worse to that effect. She didn't say it that way, but, you know, it was like, oh, my God. He's like, oh,
I actually heard it mentioned on Chicken Noodle News today as well. Or maybe it was on Morning Clasutis. I'm not sure which. But, yeah, I mean, the fact of the matter is, Gene, and everybody, this is Gene, our news ninja Gene that I mention every night, in case you, because it's been a while since Gene called in. But the fact of the matter is, there's a long continuum in this country that winds up with private contractors doing things that the military used to do for itself.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a whole lot more value in having someone who is oath sworn to not do certain things and to do others than there is for somebody who has merely had a private third party, again, contractor corporation do the background check on somebody who owes no allegiance to anything but his paycheck. Because remember, apparently, in addition to everything else they've said about Aaron Alexis, he was pissed off about not being paid in a timely fashion.
Yeah, I saw that too. I was like, oh, well, I can see why that was a little upsetting. But I can't believe, I'm surprised that they actually said that on Chicken Little Moons, because I didn't think, frankly, I mean, the BBC is kind of funny. It's funny. It's a little better than the state's news gathering programs or the corporate news you see there. It's a little better than back in the States, but it's not all that much. I mean, they've been trying to dismantle the NHS now for the last 6 months. So I don't know how long that's gonna keep up, which is kind of a shame. Because I would hate to see the NHS go.
Well, the UK's NHS is an absolute gem of a program in a world that is largely dysfunctional. And naturally, you know, it's worth remembering, Gene, that the destructive conservatism that took root here quickly metastasized into the UK, and I imagine you know that better than I do now.
Oh yeah, it's global conservatism is such a menace. I'm sorry, pardon me, NSA guy. Anyway, I won't keep you because I got to get up early in the morning. But I just had to throw that in there. It was good. When I heard that on the BBC, it's like, God, yeah, it's so loud. It's like they're actually saying something that we've talked about. You know, contractors have a horn for ages now. It's like, you've scooped them.
Well, you know, that's what makes this such a pleasant little boutique operation. We have time to think things out that others won't get to for ages. I mean, just as a for instance, I like the work that happens over there, Gene, but I saw Truthout send out a blast email today about how the FDA is, or the USDA, no, it's the USDA, I think. Yeah, the USDA is going to allow the expansion of a program that winds up with more feces on more meat. God, we covered that 2 weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah, I think we did. I don't even want to think about that. To tell you the honest truth, that's one of the reasons I stay in the UK, because it's like I'm afraid to go back to the States because my stomach and my digestion will just go to hell. Anyway, I'll let you go.
It's awful good to hear from you, Gene. Say hi to everybody over there for us, please.
I will. You take it easy.
You bye too. Bye, bye now. Bye. Our news ninja, Gene, calling from the UK and staying up late to do it. As noted in the past, Gene gets up every morning and reads the entire internet. And having him over in the UK is especially helpful because that means I get heads up on the things before you get the idea. It's about 8 minutes, 8.5 minutes past the hour on this final hour of tonight's Titanic Tuesday. We are holding at the $415 to go mark in our fundraising. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. If you can help us dig out of the hole, it would be very, very helpful because, let's see, what did Robert Frost say? And miles to go before I sleep? This ain't nothing but sleeping. It bills to pay before... You get the idea. Now, we had the story earlier in the evening about the doc, the quack at Texas A&M who wanted to lecture a woman about, you know, a hickey, and then had a straight-up conniption when she said she was there to get her some birth control. That is not the worst rotten medical care story of the evening, if you can believe it. And when you consider this story, not by a long shot, it's not. It has to do with an individual who was accompanied by his daughter to a hospital emergency room.
he had had a kidney transplant and was continuing to have problems. So this individual goes to, upon medical advice, goes to the ER. The ER of the Yale New Haven Hospital in Connecticut. Antonio Aniello and his daughter, Rosanna Girage, went to Yale New Haven Hospital's ER because he was, in fact, having trouble following a kidney transplant back in 2010. September 11th, 2011, and this is, I guess, because the thing hit the news because the lawsuit has now been filed. The doctor told him to go to the ER because he was dizzy and weak and fatigued. And his daughter went with him. He was 53, the daughter was 28. Good daughter. So there was inconclusive testing and monitoring. And he waited, no kidding, 9 hours. 9 hours. In the Yale New Haven Hospital ER. After 9 hours, and he wasn't being an asshole about it, he got up to leave. I remember when my father would sit for an hour and a half in a doctor's office, not even an ER situation, sit for an hour and a half in a doctor's office and begin looking at my mother or look at me and say, "Come on, we're going. This is ridiculous. I'm a human being. I deserve to be treated like one." And frankly, not just kept waiting here because the drug rep is back in the office with the doc. Because invariably, you'd see the either smartly dressed woman with the big sample case or the guy in the suit with the big sample case just go sashaying right on back in there, and the next thing you know, nobody's getting their name called anymore. So he waited and he waited and he waited and he waited to be seen by a kidney specialist. And then somebody from the hospital came out and told him he'd been discharged. No kidney specialist for you. Never mind the fact that you're weak and fatigued and nauseated. Goodbye now. So they got their stuff together. You know how it is in an ER, I presume. And proceeded to leave. And they're walking down the hallway, probably none too fast, because Mr. Aniello probably was still not feeling all too chipper, you know, running on one kidney that may not have been working all that well in the first place. And that's when the hospital's rent-a-cop, the security guard, a guy named Viglione, came barreling around the corner of the hallway in the hospital going full tilt, and Mr. Aniello says, "There's no trouble, I want to go home." And that's when the security guard grabs Mr. Aniello by his collar. And his daughter starts hollering, "Let go, let go, let go." And the rent-a-cop refused to release his hold on Mr. Aniello and slammed him into the ground. Slammed his head and left side. And, you know, these aren't carpeted floors, right? This is tile over concrete. and then jumped on Mr. Aniello. His daughter tried to protect him, but other representatives of the hospital jumped her. Mr. Aniello got out for his trouble, got a torn rotator cuff, all bruised up, and wound up insomniac, head injury, and since then has had PTSD and flashbacks. What the hell? He was just trying to leave. Is this the part where I cue up Lee Greenwood? Only in America, right? Yeah. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Here's Dave calling.
That's what I thought.
Well, I'm Portland. How are you guys doing over there? I was just listening to a couple of minutes of your tirade there against the some guy gets assaulted in the ER.
Well, for trying, no, not in the ER, for trying to leave the ER after they've told him to leave the ER.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's crazy. It's just nuts. I don't know. There seems to be a
well, that's our for-profit healthcare system. Well, merciful and compassionate, right.
Oh, shit. Give me a break. The it just seems like there's this trend of among the police establishment or wannabes just brutalizing people, I guess. You know, I don't know. It's just really, really scary.
I think it's one of those little steps down the road, Dave, to fascism.
Maybe one of the last ones. I mean,
everybody has to be afraid. Everybody has to do as they're told. Even you can still be beaten up even if you're doing as you're told. Remember, this guy was not going to see the kidney specialist he was promised. He waited for 9 long hours. And then was told to leave, so he's leaving and gets the beaten out of him for the trouble.
Yeah, that's completely insane. That's totally insane. I can't see how. I don't know what we can do about things now. It just seems like I don't ever advocate giving up, but there's got to be I don't know. There has to be something that people can do to get us out of this mess. No, just really, really scary. I know. I mean, I've sat for hours myself in waiting rooms in ERs. Remember when I broke my arm when I was a kid? You know, I was at a hospital where my dad worked even. I had to wait for 3 hours to get in, but they prioritized. But I hear stories about people just dying in the waiting rooms now. It's just insane. Totally, totally messed up.
Yeah, I guess Mr. Aniello should just count himself lucky that he didn't die there.
Well, I don't know. I just so messed up now. Completely messed up. You know, about 8 years ago, my mom died of liver cancer. And I was, you know, I haven't had that many close encounters with the medical industrial establishment for many years before that. And I've been at church for 10 years now. But anyway, it didn't seem like there were any options. Nothing was at all effective. Nothing showed any hope. My brother was doing some alternative therapies that were actually showing some promise. But the doctors were just vehemently, vehemently opposed to it. They were just, I couldn't believe how they reacted to it. And the thing is that these guys, these people in the medical industrial establishment they're brainwashed. They're all brainwashed by their own masters. You know, the doctors that all get it from the AMA and the drug companies, and I mean, psychiatry has totally changed over the decades. You know, used to be a psychiatrist would talk to you, now they're like...
No, that's 3 minutes and a prescription now.
They're pill pushers now. It's really insane. I would never go to a psychiatrist, and I have to admit that I have no confidence in our medical industrial establishment. I mean, if you get something my dad was like a mechanic. You know, he would put together a broken engine or a broken skull or a broken back as best he could. But you know, when it comes to preventative medicine and all that, it's just non-existent. It's not a joke. It's non-existent.
And that's one of the things that actually matters about the Affordable Care Act, Dave.
Exactly.
It's got preventable. It's got some preventive care and some wellness care built into it.
Exactly. I know it. I've read about that. And
in fact, I was going to tell you, Darlene just wrote in, and apparently, in just not very long ago at all, the news broke that the orange one, John Boehner, is going to have a vote this week in the House to keep the government running. Okay.
Oh, I thought he was going to have a liver transplant.
But wait. Here's the catch. There's always a catch with these freaks. He's only willing to hold the vote to keep the government running if Obamacare, so-called, is defunded.
I heard about that days ago. That's old news. I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm in tune that much, but I...
No, but this is the thing. It was speculated upon days ago, Dave. Now it's reality.
Yeah.
There was some question as to whether or not John Boehner not caving into the teabaggers is, you know, one of those dog bites man stories.
No, well, they always pull this shit. The way I see it, you can tell what they're going to do all the time. It's like they have a playbook, and it's lie, double down, somebody gives them a message that's true, they attack the messenger. I mean, you know, when you know what they're going to do ahead of time, you can refute them. And what really pisses me off is these guys, the Democrats or whoever the opposition is, progressives or anybody, doesn't just call them out and refute them from square one. Well, you say, hey, well, you know, whatever you say is the opposite of the truth, then you're a liar. You're a liar. So-and-so is a liar. John Boehner is a liar. They don't want health care for people. They don't want the best for America. They want the best for the 1%. And just cut to the chase, for God's sakes. They're trying to, you know, there's no compromise with these people. Compromise is doing it their way. So, I don't know. I think there would be a huge, huge outcry if Affordable Care Act
It was voted on by the House of Representatives and passed. It was voted on by the Senate and passed. It was signed into law by the President of the United States. It was then tested in the Supreme Court of the United States and upheld in large part. What part of that do these little spoiled pissants not understand? But you know, Dave, from listening to the program that I get all kinds of right-wing BS interview pitches on any given day, right?
Yeah.
So I open it today, and what do I find? Well, Obamacare is an unsustainable disaster. No kidding.
Interesting. Well, again, it's the opposite of the truth. Them save money, and they're liars. That's my answer. If I were in a position to answer publicly, I would say, well, that's the opposite of the truth. Them save money, and they're liars. And it's been, the whole thing has been scored by the CBO anyway. The numbers are there, but then, you know, they'll attack the CBO or they'll attack whoever says that. You know, it's just so it's tiresome. But you just gotta, it's like fighting the last niche battles of this Civil War or something. You know, you just gotta go see it through. I think they're gonna shut down the government. It's pretty obvious, and see how people like that.
Yeah, but see, Dave, how will people like that? You want me to get out the cracked magic eight ball and the tattered and frayed wizard robes and give it a good shake and tell you how they're going to blame it on the Kenyan Muslim socialist.
I don't think so. I think people are just And I was just checking some polls over the weekend about how most people are still really, really angry about this financial crash. And 5 years ago, and we're 5 years on now, right? It's the 5 year anniversary. People are still angry about it, and people still even more so blame people who are in charge. I'm really pissed at Obama because, he's out there. You read that thing in CNN Money where he was talking about how the wealth gap is increased and wages are down for the middle class since he took office. Well, you know, if they had done the right thing, if they had reined in the banks when they had a chance, it wouldn't be. Things would be getting better.
Oh, I know. I tweeted something earlier today, Dave. There was this BS headline and subhead in the New York Times today that said that what's her name, Dr. Yellen, her potential for being the Fed nominee is a capitulation to Obama's supporters on the left, a capitulation.
You know, one thing she's got that's really, really super positive about her, and I'll tell you what it is, she's not Larry Summers, okay?
No, Elizabeth Warren as chairman of the Fed would be a capitulation to the Obama support on the so-called left. Putting some banksters in Supermax would be a capitulation to the people on Obama's left. Yellen is not a capitulation of any sort.
I don't know that much about her, to tell you the truth. So I couldn't, you know, I don't like to speak of what I don't know, but whom I don't know. But I was pleased to see that Larry Summers wasn't going to get it, because he would be terrible, and he's one of the worst guys. I don't know. Is he a Democrat or Republican? What is he? I don't know.
He's a Clintonian.
Yeah, he's a Clintonian. He's a corporatist.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Bill Clinton, by the way, I don't know if you saw this or not. I'm kind of shifting gears real quick, but this really badly needs to get out there so that people can get their heads around it and get the screaming over with and then get busy doing something about it. I don't know if you realize this, but Bill Clinton recently gave a speech in which he said he just couldn't understand why we hadn't already started building the Keystone XL pipeline, that it is a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, Bill Clinton is a total...
corporate tool?
Yeah, that's it. You must be reading my mind over here, you know? We're a long way away from each other here. You got
speed of light, Dave, speed of light.
Yeah, you're superhuman over there. But seriously, I mean, Clinton is... These guys are all the same. These guys, there's this shadow party. It's just the corporatists, and it's like Kerry and McCain on the same page. It's what? And let me ask you something. Is Lieberman still in the Senate?
No.
Because I was listening to Democracy Now on the way home. I was downtown, and I was driving home. Just a short drive, you know, a 5 minute drive home. But I was driving home and I thought I heard his voice in some hearing at some place. And I was just, God, I hate that guy. I really despise him. I hate him like with a passion. I've got to tell you.
Heat of a Thousand Suns?
I have a personal enmity. I hate this guy. I hate him.
And by the way, one of the things, getting back to Yellen for just a second, Dave.
Sure.
Sandra pointed out to me via a tweet, and this is what one of those things that makes it so silly to say that he's capitulating to the left. Yellen supported the repeal of Glass-Steagall.
Yeah, whatever. There.
So you see, you know, I mean, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, yeah. 90% of the political elites get together and agree when it comes to screwing the American people. Okay, that's something they're all agreed on, or making war. treating the industrial, military industrial complex more. That's a given anymore. It's people should just, you know, get past that and just, I kind of want to shift gears back to Lieberman because I just...
Sure, go ahead.
I had an idea in my mind. You know, I particularly hate this guy, I'll tell you, because it's kind of a tribal thing for me. You know, some tribes we join voluntarily and others we're born into, and this guy really, really, I just really vehemently hate him because he's a member of a tribe that I'm associated with. And it's like, you know, I really hate Eric Cantor, too. I hate Eric Cantor, too. And, I mean, it's somebody calling in and saying, well, you know, I hate these Jews, so-and-so. I'm Jewish, okay? You know, it's like you can... did you hear that story about how they want to make it a crime for blacks to use the N-word when talking to one another? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that wouldn't... Yeah, if the First Amendment is really the First Amendment, that's gonna fly like a Led Zeppelin.
Well, they're just more trying to stamp down people and
because you know what, if you can make that law stick, then you can take Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, and every one of the last right wing, Alex Jones, right off the air. Not because they use that word, but because they use words that are far more inflammatory than that.
Yeah, absolutely. But the point is that it's just this tribal thing that I was doing some thinking about it, you know, over the weekend and thinking about giving you a call. I had a busy day today. I was spent the morning in an attorney's office talking to a guy that
about that issue we talked about earlier.
Yeah, about my case, and he's actually seems like a real go getter, and he's got an open mind. He's got a lot more spunk than. A few other people I've talked to in recent weeks, and I've got a scheduled hearing tomorrow, so I'm going to try to push out another week on that if I can, and get 120 days for discovery. And I'm gathering evidence. Things are going okay. I'm feeling okay about it. I really do. I have some friends helping me and teaching me how to do legal research, and it's actually a lot of fun, and I'm actually getting into it. I feel like going back to law school or something, you know, because I really have a good grasp of this. This guy,
you got your bachelor's?
I have, yeah, absolutely, yeah. I have a bachelor of science.
Why not study up for the LSAT? And I mean, it's not exactly what I would call honest work, but you know,
depending on what you're doing, you know, it's. I think people get into this kind of model. It's all about personality. If you've got a really aggressive this that I was speaking to today had a really aggressive really kind of it's like your show. He started swearing and I started really liking it. You know, we were talking about the banks and he goes, well, they're cocksuckers and motherfuckers. I want to do whatever I can, but this is the situation. Da 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 da. You know, so, but I said. Oh, I like this guy. You know what I mean? I felt, other than the people that were going, well, you know, I don't want to take your case, but I'll refer you to so and so. And I don't know. So far, this guy is the guy that I like his personality the best. And he seemed to really, really, I was showing him some of my paperwork and he was just pouring over it and really just examining it like a crippled squirrel or something, you know, looking over where to start tearing into it. You know what I mean? I liked his demeanor and attitude and everything about it. It seemed to me to be a lot more appealing to me and more the direction that I want to go than some other folks that I've talked to. But that aside, you know, getting back to the tribal thing, I associate myself with certain tribes, and you know, for like 30 years. I had a confession I had to make to you, is what the bottom line of all of this is. But, you know, for 30 years I associated myself with a Democratic tribe, but from 32 years, from when I was 18 until I was 50 in 2010, and I was really, really angry then, and I'm angrier now at these fucking enablers. I'm just so pissed at them. And nothing, you know, you can't pull a bank heist without a wheel man. And these guys are just, they're enablers. They're enablers. And you know who I'm talking about, right? The Democrats.
Some of them, yeah, absolutely.
None of this could ever have happened without a majority of them. Lieberman and another guy that I Smiling Joe, I really don't like Biden either, because...
Oh, I thought you were Smiling Joe. I thought you meant Manchin.
You know what? He's a newcomer anyway. It takes a few years for people to get on my radar a lot, from what I've heard from you.
Oh, get him on yours in a hurry.
I'll try. I'll do my
best. I mean, there's a lot to not love about Joe Manchin.
Yeah, well, he's the best Democrat they could elect over there in West Virginia, I suppose. But, I check out a lot of love YouTube, because you can look at really old stuff on YouTube. I was watching like the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings a while back, and the guys that were on the Senate Judiciary Committee back then, and Biden was one of the guys that was on there. He and Teddy and some other old faces, they were all there, and you know they let that creep in and. You know, see what we're suffering through 20 years later. It's this guy is still around, and he seems to be going pretty strong, you know. But I hate Clarence Thomas.
I remember when the gang of whatever got together to give a pass to John Roberts, who said he was only going to call balls and strikes, Dave, remember?
That was just a few years ago.
Yeah, it was just a few years ago, and they got together. I remember when Senator Robert Byrd, my senator, who by comparison to Joe Manchin was an absolute solon. You know, I mentioned Constitution Day a couple of minutes ago. He had a lot to do with Constitution Day becoming a holiday. It, supposedly, in every public school in the United States on this day, there's supposed to be extra teaching about the Constitution. Now, when the program's over, I'm going to have to go and query Ferg as to whether or not that actually happened. And if not, I think we get to ask why. Well, probably because it's not on the standardized test. Constitution, schmonstitution. But anyway, I remember when Robert Byrd said that he was going to vote in favor of Sammy Alito, who had written an opinion as an appeals court judge upholding shooting a nonviolent fleeing black teenager in the head.
Good God.
As being appropriate conduct by the police. We tend to think, because we don't have that much of a grasp on being able to keep too many historical plates spinning in the air at the same time, Dave, that the recent abuses of the police are something new. Well, they aren't. They've been going on for generations. But anyway, so Alito said he was all for that. But Robert Byrd said that he had received a lot of heartfelt handwritten letters with coffee cup circles and donut sugar stains on them from his constituents in West Virginia, who wanted him to vote for Sammy Alito because he was going to defend the Bible. I remember it, because I also remember at the time that there were all kinds of right-wing radio ads being played all over this state saying, "Tell Senator Byrd to vote for Sammy Alito because he's a good Christian man." So I remember that stuff, and it's hard to forgive that stuff, because among other things, all that "I've received mail from donut stains, blah, blah," was nothing but a great big stinking lie, because at that time, and even to this day, in the wake of September 11th, 2001, it takes 6 weeks for a mailed letter through the U.S. Postal Service to go from anywhere in West Virginia to the actual desk of some staffer in some Senate office building on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., because of the anthrax attacks. That's a fact. And there was simply not enough time for those letters with those coffee cup rings and those donut sugar stains imploring Senator Byrd to stand up for Bible-loving Sammy to have ever even gotten there, Dave. It was just a lie.
Well, I think that, you know, down deep, Robert Byrd was pretty conservative. He was pretty
deeply conservative. I found it interesting.
He was a Klansman in his.
I'm not. You know what? He was, and then he wasn't.
Never.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, my grandfather was too.
Yeah.
Because every white male in this community was. I'm not excusing it. I'm trying to work it off, but it was a reality around here.
Yeah. What you have to do, though, you know, I think that. I just keep going back to this kind of tribal idea that I was thinking about. You know, I really resent people who were members of my tribe. You know, people make assumptions about the way you think, because if you're a member of a tribe and you think this way, so and so, such and such. It was a funny thing. I was in this hotel in Nice, France. Dig this. I'm reading a tour, I was like on the road in Europe for months in 2000, and I had a great time, and I spent very little money. I had the most wonderful time just walking around and traveling around, and being an art major, I didn't need to go even go to too many museums. I didn't, but I could just enjoy myself on the streets out there. But I'm in this hotel. It was terrible. It was a Marriott hotel, and I'm reading this travel brochure, and this other guy at the next table is reading the same travel brochure, but it was in Hebrew, okay? So being a member of that tribe I'm talking about, I was friendly enough, and I said, "Hi, are you guys from Israel?" And this guy turned on me like a freaking pit bull. I swear to God, guy turns on me like a pit bull, and he goes, "What do you think what President Clinton is doing, giving away to Jerusalem, blah, 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 and negotiating with the Arabs, blah, blah, blah?" And I said, "Hey, whoa, 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 hold your horses here, man. First of all, I don't set American policy. Believe it or not, I don't have a direct line to Bill Clinton's office. And number two, I've been over here in Europe for 2 months, and I haven't even read the news. I don't even know what's going on. So give me a goddamn break. Get off it, you know? But, you know, so he was thinking I was, you know, an American, so I was endorsing everything that Clinton said, and I was just, I'm Jewish, so I was trying to be friendly with him. You know, I had made some friends with some other Israelis when I was there. Ridiculous, though. It's really ridiculous. And
it's interesting you would mention that, because I got a link. I've described in the past how much I enjoy Anthony Bourdain's work on TV. It's one of the few things that I'll actually make time to watch, and I haven't been very good at watching it on Chicken Noodle News, because I'm not very good at watching Chicken Noodle News. But he did an episode in Palestine. And he starts out in Israel, and he says something that I have never heard him say or seen him write in any of his books before, and that is that he is half Jewish. Now, he was not raised Jewish. He was not raised in the Jewish tradition. His mom was Jewish. His dad was Catholic, something like, but absolutely unreligious people.
That makes you Jewish, though, if your mom's Jewish.
Right. So and for years, you know, he's done Lebanon. He's done Egypt. He's done Saudi Arabia. For years, he did not set foot in Israel. And I think I heard him say somewhere along the way that it was because of the Troubles. So the thing opens, and he's really candid, and he says, "By the end of this episode, I will be to some people a self-hating Jew, to others a Zionist tool, to others a terrorist sympathizer," and just goes through the, and he goes, "Because this is the one place on earth that nobody can have a rational discussion, but what you're talking about, that, you know, that sense of kinship, that sense of membership, the first thing they show is him showing up in you know, somewhere over near the Wailing Wall, and some guy's on him like a duck on a June bug. The next thing you know, he's got a strap wrapped around one arm, he's got a little box on his head and a hat." And after that, he said, "Wow, do I feel like a great big giant hypocrite." And he went on and did his usual pretty damn good TV, because he interviewed and sat down and dined with, that's the whole thing, it's called Parts Unknown, it's about food, and he sat down and dined with both sides, because there's something about the breaking of bread.
Right, right. I had
But if it's worth it's worth finding on YouTube.
That sounds really cool. I had meals with a lot of interesting diverse people over there years ago when I was in Europe. But I think that a lot of times, you know, a lot of the real stringent people in a tribe will not listen to anybody but the people in their tribe, and it comes down to sometimes I don't know. I had a lot of problems with this because I could talk to you all day long, and I could probably tell you a lot of things, and you'd listen to what I have to say, and you'd be open minded because, you know, I'm a progressive, but I mean, a lot of times, I could never talk to, say, a Republican, because they would never listen to me. They would never listen to me because I wasn't a member of their tribe, and they have a deeply tribal instinct. You know, they're just, a lot of them are really close-minded. But you know, what happened was,
and then there's the lot of them who are just deeply, deeply stupid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know that makes me bigoted toward them, but I'm bigoted against stupid.
Don't be sorry. I think stupid is a manifestation of ignorance or something like that. I have a deep desire to communicate with people that have the opposite opinion and persuade people. And I spent a lot of years as a car salesman. I don't particularly like getting in a monkey suit and a tie and a dress shirt and slacks and going out there and acting like a fool, but I would do it because that was my disguise. I mean, if I was going to study chimps in Africa, I'd probably get on a chimp suit too. You know what I mean? To build some rapport with those animals, and whatever animal I'm talking to, I try to get on the same page with that person. Like I was talking about that attorney today, and he and I built an instant rapport, and I felt really comfortable talking with the guy. So, you know, you can get a lot deeper into somebody if you get on that if you get into them past the you can actually even persuade them with something they would never be persuaded of if you can get past that filter, that barrier that they put up against the people that they don't like, the bad people. And there are people that would never listen to you, right, Bob? You know that. There are people that would never listen to you. You just give up because what you are, your identity, is to them is just too abhorrent. And I don't.
Well, but you know what's funny out of that, Dave? Back in the day when I did terrestrial radio for a couple of years in America's fifth smallest radio market.
Yes.
I had more regular right wing listeners than left.
Well, it's because you were passive. They could turn you off anytime they wanted.
No. They were tuning in to get jacked up.
Pardon me?
They were tuning in to get all jacked up. They needed an enemy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I mean, it's the old, and in fact, Tim from L.A. used to talk about it. It's the old Howard Stern factor. People who love Howard Stern will tune in for an hour a day. People who hate Howard Stern will tune in for the whole 3 hours.
Yeah,
because they're waiting for something to object to. I kind of acted against type when we got this ball rolling, because I pretty early on established a rule: no right wingers allowed, and I enforce that zealously.
Well, let me just say this:
because this is not entertainment.
Yeah, I understand. I understand it's not entertainment, but to move forward with my idea here that I was going to put forward was that, you know, I have endeavored to communicate people that have the opposite opinion rather than, I really enjoy talking with you and I enjoy listening to your show, and it's awesome, but I would feel more of a sense of accomplishment. But I can't convince you of anything because we agree on everything. What the hell? What am I going to convince you of? I would have to believe the opposite to convince you of anything that you don't already believe.
But the purpose of all of this, Dave, is not for me to convince you or you to convince me.
Mm-hmm.
The word conversation in conversation radio is really, really real. What we'll find out is that while we may agree in general principles, quite often, or we may agree where we want to wind up, we may have entirely divergent ideas on which path to take to get there.
Yeah.
And that's where the real work takes place, Dave.
Absolutely. I enjoy, though, the thing, challenge for me is to make contact with a mind opposite and show them the logic, my logic of my point of view, and convince them. And I think what you have to do is you have to identify people's motives. And a lot of people have selfish motives. That's just human nature. I think that that conservatism in general appeals to the lower quarter of human nature. A lot of meanness and selfishness, and we all have it in us, but they manifest it far more openly and overtly, shall we say. And so I've made an effort to really communicate with a lot of conservatives,
But does it not leave you feeling like you've just thrown away however much time that you will never, ever, ever get back?
Not at all. Not at all. Let me tell you. Let me just communicate this to you. I'm sorry. That's kind of a rude way of saying it. But I just, you know what? I stop these people in their tracks, and I leave them grimaced and silent. And they're, you know, I tell them things like, I talk to evangelical Christians. I told you my cousins are evangelicals. I said, you know, God gave you a brain. God gave you a brain. That's a gift. God gave you a brain. You need to think. You need to use that brain and not just believe what people tell you, the people you like tell you. You ask yourself, does that make sense? What are you doing? Think about that. You think you're a Christian? The Christians want to starve people and cut people off food stamps? Is that what being a Christian's about? It seems to me like it seems to me like you're serving another master. It seems like you're serving another. You're not serving the Lord. What the hell's wrong with you? I mean, I'm not even a Christian myself, but I tend to like the message of Christ. I mean, after all, he was a nice Jewish guy, just like me. But seriously, I mean, I endeavor to reach that, and it's tough. It's because you really got to fight human nature, that strong inner desire to tell somebody they're a fucking idiot. You know what I mean? When that's what you believe. But to get past that and say, well, you know, this fracking, they're going to poison all your water. You do know that, don't you? You do know that. You are aware of that, don't you? They're going to poison your water and you're going to die. You're going to drink that water and it's going to kill you because they're putting poison in you. And when you put it to them like that, then their eyes widen and they're taking it back and they're going, holy shit. This is my own personal interest involved here, you know. I was talking to this dude who had some apartment buildings. He's a pretty rich guy. He's a Republican. And I said, well, you should really be into solar because you get those solar panels on all your apartments, and man, they'll pay for themselves right away. And even if you've got a vacant apartment, the solar panels still make it money for you. What the hell? What's wrong with you? Don't you like money? You know? And they don't know what to say. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, I put this message to people, and they're taken aback. As I've probably said in the past, I'm a real proponent of renewable energy. Because I tell people, you know, what's the matter with you? Don't you like money? They like money. Of course everyone likes money. Even you and me, I like money. I'd love money. But, you know, if I had money, I'd have more freedom. Money is freedom. But it's also, you know, why piss your money away paying PGE or whoever your electric provider is when you can have have it for yourself and make your own. Screw it, you know? It's like during Prohibition, having your own still or something. You don't need them. You don't need them. And they're starting to respond to that, too. You know, I'm seeing positive responses. And I don't need to have the satisfaction to tell them they're idiots and they're wrong. I want to convince them. I want to convince them, you know? And that's something that really gives me a lot of personal satisfaction, is convincing people that I disagree with. Getting, you know, sometimes you just got to bite your tongue with these people, because I want to punch them in the nose. Seriously, I'm not, you know, I'm not immune to those base feelings, but that's the human nature that they're slaves to. And I'm not a slave to that. We have brains, you know. You and I, we have brains, Bob. And we can overcome that base human nature and learn the power of persuasion. And when we persuade people, it's getting to be like, you know, I don't want to kill my enemies. I want to make them my friends and make them my allies against the people that are manipulating, controlling them. You know, that's my passion. Because when we do that, then they can't resist. I mean, it's like the thing with Syria. I mean, we were talking about that town hall meeting that McCain had over in Phoenix, man. I wish I was there. I wish I was there. Sounds like it was a lot of fun. They were ripping him a new asshole. I love it. I love that stuff. And these are people I wouldn't agree on a lot of things with, but they should all get solar over there in Arizona. Everyone should have solar over there.
Look, everywhere from Florida across South Georgia, South Alabama, Southern Mississippi, Louisiana,
Eastern
Texas, it should be one long solar strip.
It's insane, you know. There's all that thing out there.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Dave, I hate to do it, but I gotta stop because we're up against quitting time.
Oh, I love you, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Good hearing from you, Dave. You take care.
All right.
Bye now. Dave, calling from Oregon. And it is. It's time to get out of here. Where does the time go? About 2.5 minutes before the hour. And thanks to everybody who contributed to keep things going this evening. We sort of pulled to a halt at the $415 mark. That means that we will begin tomorrow evening at $565, unless there are changes between now and then. So thank you very much. I'll pay some bills as soon as we get offline here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our News Ninjas, Gene and Susan. It was awfully good to hear from News Ninja Gene this evening. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Go to acact.org and learn what you can do and to either begin or continue taking part in your advocacy for an end to what has been called Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.